new study shows the COVID-19 Omicron variant is thrice as infectious as the dreaded Delta variant. Metro Manila now very low risk for COVID-19, according to the Okta Research Group. That says two cities in the NCR achieve herd immunity. And later on the program, we'll discuss the Philippines' ballooning national debt due to government's pandemic loans. We'll speak with the president of the Freedom from Debt Coalition, Dr. Rene Ofreneo. I'm Rain Musni. Dateline Philippines begins right now. For those of you watching us on YouTube and Facebook, glad you could join us. We begin with a grim warning on the new COVID-19 mutation that's slowly spreading across the globe. The Omicron variant poses a threefold higher risk of reinfection than the Delta variant. That's according to a study conducted by the South African Center for Epidemiological Modeling and Analysis, as well as the National Institute of Communicable Diseases. The NICD added this could be the reason behind the recent increase in COVID reinfections in South Africa. It also says the Omicron variant was able to evade immunity and is rapidly becoming the dominant variant in the country. India reports its first two cases of the Omicron COVID-19 variant. India's health ministry says the two male patients showed mild symptoms but declined to provide their vaccine or travel history, citing their privacy. All of the primary and secondary contacts of both cases have been traced. Local media reports five contacts of one of the men also tested positive for the new variant. India's case count currently stands at 34.6 million, with nearly 470,000 deaths. It has since fully vaccinated just 49% of its 944 million adults, despite having ample supply of domestically made shots. A vaccinated person without any links to risk countries has tested positive for the Omicron variant in Spain. This brings the country's total number of Omicron cases to five. The patient is a 62-year-old man in Madrid who has shown mild symptoms since November 29th and is now under home isolation. Authorities are also monitoring two other similar cases. Meanwhile, in Australia, a student from Sydney is the country's first Omicron infection of a person who has no travel history. This is the country's ninth case of the new coronavirus variant. Despite this threat, authorities refrain from changing course as its most populous state, New South Wales, is set to push through with its reopening of borders after a four-month closure due to the Delta strain. The U.S. lays out a new strategy to fight the Omicron and Delta variants this winter season. In a bid to increase COVID testing, President Joe Biden has required private health insurers to reimburse their customers for the cost of over-the-counter tests and make 50 million more tests available for free. Mask requirements on planes, trains, and public transportation will also be extended until March 18th. Biden announced a shorter COVID testing timeline for inbound travelers as well. The Omicron variant has now spread to four states, with New York reporting five cases Thursday.
It used to be that international travel flying to the United States, traveler flying to the United States, had to test negatively 3 days before their departure from that country. Well, I'm announcing today that all inbound international travelers must test within 1 day of departure, regardless of their vaccination status or nationality. This tighter testing timetable provides an added degree of protection as scientists continue to study the Omicron variant.
Germany, meanwhile, gets tough on the unvaccinated. The government plans to bar unvaccinated individuals from all but the most essential businesses, such as grocery stores, pharmacies, and bakeries. Mandatory vaccinations are also among the measures being discussed. Pharmaceutical firm GlaxoSmithKline says tests done on its COVID-19 antibody drug show it's effective against the new Omicron variant. More in this report.
Drug maker GlaxoSmithKline said Thursday that the antibody-based COVID-19 therapy that it is working on with U.S. partner Vir is likely effective in battling the Omicron variant. The company pointed to lab tests and a study on hamsters that have demonstrated its antibody cocktail works against viruses that were bioengineered to mimic the hallmark mutations of the latest coronavirus variant. For confirmation, a so-called pseudovirus with all of the Omicron mutations is now being tested, with an update expected by the end of the year, Glaxo added in its statement. In a separate development, British regulators on Thursday approved the use of that drug called Sotrovimab. The drug is for people with mild to moderate COVID-19 illness and who are at high risk of that morphing into severe disease. Britain's Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency recommended use of the drug as soon as possible and within 5 days of the onset of symptoms. Sotrovimab is based on monoclonal antibodies, which are lab-made versions of natural antibodies the body generates to fight off infection. Similar products are offered or being developed by Eli Lilly, Regeneron, and AstraZeneca. Earlier this week, Regeneron said lab tests and computer modeling suggest that COVID-19 antibody drugs, including its own, would have reduced efficacy against the Omicron variant. But Vir's CEO said Thursday that its drug, quote, was deliberately designed with a mutating virus like Omicron in mind.
Well, the Philippines' COVID-19 task force releases new testing and quarantine guidelines for international passengers arriving from countries not included on its red list. Fully vaccinated will need to have a negative RT-PCR test conducted within 72 hours prior to departure and undergo a 5-day facility-based quarantine. They will be tested again on the 5th day. The unvaccinated, partially vaccinated, or those whose vaccination status cannot be independently validated will be tested on the 7th day. Regardless, if they get a negative result, they will all still be required to quarantine at home for 14 days. Meanwhile, returning Filipinos from red list countries will only be allowed to deplane at the Ninoy Aquino or Clark International Airports. The Philippines on Thursday logged 564 additional COVID cases. This raises the country's total COVID infections to 2,833,000. The health department also recorded 40 more deaths and 694 recoveries. The positivity rate now stands at 1.7%. Local research group Okta says Metro Manila is now classified as very low risk for COVID-19. Based on the group's latest assessment, the positivity rate in the National Capital Region further declined to 1.2% from November 26 to December 2nd. Average daily new cases in Metro Manila are now at 138 compared to 416 from the same period last year. The World Health Organization recommends at least a 5% positivity rate before regions can reopen further. Metro Manila is under alert level 2 until mid-December. Two Metro Manila cities, San Juan and Marikina, have surpassed their target population for COVID-19 vaccination. San Juan actually has reached more than double of its initial goal. That's more than 214,000 people. The city is also set to begin administering booster shots for adults under the A1 to A5 categories tomorrow.
Minabuti namin bukas pa magsimula upang maging mas organisado po ang proseso. So pinaghahandaan na namin ng malawakang pagbibigay ng booster shot sa A1 to A5.
Marikina, meanwhile, has now vaccinated nearly 500,000 people, or 143% of its original target population. The city is now waiting for more stocks of jabs to sustain its inoculation program.
Aming herd immunity, nasa 143% na kami. Ang nababakunahang kabayan dito sa Marikina ay 435,000 na. Ang target natin para sa herd immunity, yung 70% ay 342,000.
As for the COVID-19 national vaccination days, the health department says it resulted in the inoculation of 8 million people. More than 14,000 doses of AstraZeneca's COVID vaccine gone to waste in Negros Occidental. The vaccines were part of the 45,000 jabs that arrived in the province on November 8, but these were not used because some local government units preferred other brands of vaccines. He adds the vaccines were already close to expiring when they were delivered to them. The provincial government plans to send the jabs back to the health department for analysis if they can still be used. Presbytero Velasco, president of the Philippines League of Provinces, says local authorities are not to blame in this incident.
All the NGOs closely monitor the expiration dates of the vaccines given to us, knowing fully well that a lot of money has been used in buying these vaccines. No, so let's hear first the explanation of Governor Lacson. No? I imagine a number of NGOs experienced this, no, but we should not blame the government. They have been trying their best to give us the vaccines that we need.
Well, COVID patients at the Philippine General Hospital now down to 54. According to PGH spokesman Dr. Jonas Del Rosario, they also haven't admitted any new cases in 2 days, allowing them to reopen their wards to more non-COVID patients. Del Rosario hopes government can use this lull in infections to prepare for future surges, especially amid the threat of the new Omicron variant.
PGH is a general hospital, and it just so happened that the surge occurred and we were asked to help, and we were not ready. Not everybody was not ready. So we made do of what we have, and it was a makeshift COVID referral center. Some of the specialty centers like Heart Center, NKTI, Lung Center, they were COVID referral centers as well. But their mandate really is to take care of this specialized cases. If we can then dedicate really an infectious disease facility and then you put people there, then these hospitals can operate just like PGH can do the mandate, which is really taking care of a multitude of patients with different problems.
Del Rosario also urged lawmakers to allocate more funds for the salaries of health workers as they prepare for the 2022 budget.
Give the benefits to the frontliners. You know, we might have all the equipment, we might have all the rooms. I already told you before, if we do not have the people to man the hospital, then we're still limited to the number of patients we can take care of. So talagang una po yung salaries, maybe increase the salaries of the nurses and paramedical professionals and even the doctors, just to slow down the tide of people leaving the country.
The Philippine government has developed its own scorecard for its pandemic response in the face of failing reviews of various organizations looking at how countries have tackled COVID-19. But lenders like the World Bank have also forced Manila to ask, given the huge resources through debt made available to the Philippine government, shouldn't COVID response have better results? And whose scorecard should we be watching out for? Joining us today to help us answer those questions is Dr. Rene Ofreneo of the Freedom from Debt Coalition and Professor Emeritus of the University of the Philippines. Professor, good afternoon and grateful you could join us today.
Well, thank you. Good day, Ma'am Ray. It seems that the female name of Rene.
Okay, we'll call you Rene then. I know you've written about this before, just in the past few weeks. But first off, it seems to be true in October, and it seems to be true today. The Philippines is lagging its pandemic response, despite the huge amount of money it can access through debt. What's your reaction to this analysis?
Well, that's the point. You see, when COVID came, everyone was talking, do we have the money? And so they borrowed heavily. But the point is, was the money used wisely, judiciously, fairly? And it seems that I think you all know the Bloomberg survey. We came out last in terms of resiliency building. And then today in Southeast Asia, we have probably the highest unemployment rate. So still a long while before we can really turn around the economy. And the economy really shrunk by almost 10% last year. And so because of that, we have a very low base. So whatever positive GDP growth being registered this quarter and still not enough. In the meantime, that based on your report, ma'am, the COVID charge is going down here in the Philippines, but there are other surges that are worrying, concerning. We have a surge in debt accumulation, surge in debt service, surge in budget deficit. So how will the next government handle this the economic situation? And then and failing to do so, how will the government handle the other surges, surge in unemployment, surge in poverty, surge in hunger? So it's a very, very big problem for not only for next year, but for the whole of 5 or 6 years of the next administration.
All right. It seems that's what we did. Government debt has ballooned almost 20% in the past year alone. Many saying this is acceptable given the country's debt to GDP ratio. Is that true? Is it indeed sustainable?
That is a very big issue. You see, a debt situation is sustainable so long as your economy is able to grow fast and at a rate enough to pay for the debt. We have experiences in the past where the technocrats said, don't worry about debt because the economy is growing and then we can pay. It never happened. It did not happen during the Marshall Law period of 1970s. It did not happen in the 1990s. And now, you see, after 3 or 4 decades of debt servicing, in 2019, we succeeded in reducing the ratio, debt-to-service ratio, to 39% plus. But now it's 63, as of the end of September, 63% debt-to-GDP ratio. Can you imagine? If you are a farmer and you are able to harvest is about 63 or 65% consists of debt, then how can you be sustainable? And then and what are the prospects of growing the economy? That's why I would like to hear. We would like to hear from all the presidentials what are their plans to grow the economy. It seems that their plans are very simplistic, like open the economy to more foreign investment. That sounds nice, except that the reality in the world today is global distancing, and that the study of the UN Conference on Trade and Development say that there is a slowdown in the flow of foreign investment, and that's understandable. And especially if you related this to what's happening worldwide, this growing trade conflicts, conflict between U.S. and China. You see India withdrawing from RCEP, charging China of trade protectionism. You have some simmering conflict between Korea and Japan. And then Korea and Japan, members of RCEP, and you're joining another trade pact like a Trans-Pacific Partnership. And so you have all these developments. So the point is our technocrats, the next government, should be very serious in re-strategizing the economy. They should not just come up with the old tired formula like liberalize, deregulate, privatize. See, we have been raising this in the 1980s and 1990s under the World Bank Structural Adjustment Program. And look what's happening. Mm-hmm. And that's why right now, today, ma'am, there's a hearing of Senate on RCEP. Again, they're projecting if we do not join RCEP, we will lose something like $2 trillion or something like that. What is missing in the way our technocrats are planning the economy? They don't identify the winners and the losers. And then, and that's why our farming sector is questioning if this will lead to more import liberalization, what will happen to the farming sector? And because they have been suffering, you see, you know what happened with the case of rice and the rice tarification law. And then, of course, we have this swine flu in the case of the piggery. And then the formula is simply liberalized and open up. So the same with the chicken. But one thing I would like to raise is if we are really serious in dealing with China as a trade partner, can we ask China, can you help us curb smuggling? Because smuggling is a very big problem, not only for agriculture, but also for industry. Of course, aside from that, you have this problem of drugs. But you see, if they can correct that, because you see, if you go to the World Trade Organization international data, statistics show that our imports from China is small. But the statistics of the WTO show that the exports of China to the Philippines is very big. So we understand.
Of course, all these imbalances, it's a web of issues that we'll have to tackle one by one with the presidential polls. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time in this administration to fix things. And of course, COVID will run a long time still. A majority of our Philippine debt is in government securities. But one analysis was sounding the alarm that our bonds, that bonds from India, you mentioned India earlier, as well as the Philippines, are most at risk amid threat from Omicron, bringing possible economic slowdowns in Asia. The report pointed out that since Philippine bonds have among the steepest yield curves in seven Asian countries, it means that any additional fiscal stimulus would come at a higher cost for governments. You did mention, of course, GDP may not be as high as we think it is, and so how does this impact us now?
Well, you mentioned this the terms of the debt. You see, in 2020, when they were contracting the debts, some of the debt, they said, "Well, these are medium and long term." But I think under the next administration, some of them will at least mature, and that under Presidential Decree 1177, the government is forced to set aside this so-called debt service. And the debt service right now is more than one-fourth of the national budget, as projected by the Bureau of Treasury. So this is really concerning. And the national budget deficit is now close to 10% of the GDP. So how do you address all of this? And then this rising cost of debt because of the negative grade given to us by Fitch. And then I think some other rating agencies are about to downgrade us. So added cost of debt, we saw that before in the 1980s because of the ballooning debt. And then it even matured into a debt default, which is terrible. So we hope to avoid that. But most important, what is the overall strategy to get out of the this debt problem? And then what is the overall strategy to grow the economy, given the external constraints, given all these difficulties? We hope our presidential ball will stop doing just a mere sloganeering, like a health problem, we will spend more, like that. What is the overall? And then how do you mobilize the population? That is something missing. How right. do you mobilize people?
Rene Semper, of course, some people were saying that we shouldn't even be thinking about, you know, the credit rating agencies at the moment. Government has developed its own scorecard for its pandemic response. But even there, barely passed. We have graphic that shows it's 44.8% versus, 4.8 score versus its perfect score of 9. But shouldn't we be working toward the commitment we made before the lenders, the World Bank, primarily?
Yes, but they, you see, they have this responsibility also. For example, in the case of the Asian Development Bank, when we borrowed this $1.5 billion under the COVID-19 active response and expenditure support, at the end of the agreement, there's a discussion on debt sustainability. And then the ADB said, oh, the debt situation in the Philippines is sustainable. And then but they are using the data of 2019. And then and this was April 2020. All their projections in April 2020, wrong by now, did not materialize. And so their projection of debt to GDP ratio of less than about 40 to 50% in 2 years did not happen. We went above this ratio. So it is not a question simply of coming up with paper projections, but you really have to go to real data. How will the sector industry, for example, industry, you have export-oriented sector, you have the import-dependent sector. Well, usually some of the technocrats, they just talk about some exportables like electronics, auto parts. But even that is now under, shields because Vietnam now is surging in this area. But in the meantime, what do you do with the industries managed by our local industrialists, like the Gokongwei Group? They're producing so much of a snack food industry. So, but you have these imports. Now you are the same with agriculture. Again, let me come back to what I've been saying. And I've been listening to your program, ma'am. But what is missing in the discussion in business and industry, they don't outline who are the winners, who are the losers, and then the winners, how do you transform the winners to become real winners, and then the losers to make them survivors and eventual winners. And they always rely on some projections using the so-called CGE model. And then you have this comparative advantage concept, which is we should be more proactive in the use of this concept of comparative advantage. For example, in the car industry, shall we just rely on trying to have more models assembled in the Philippines when it's very clear now in the next 10 years the world will switch to automotive industry? I don't see any program preparing us for this. In the meantime, we shall be assembling cars that will be outdated in a few years. And then, but we have a very good opportunity to go to e-vehicles because we have very good programmers.
Right. Well, Rene, we're looking at a huge debt. Where do you think the country's pandemic response and funds might have fallen through the cracks? You were saying debt accumulation, debt service, budget deficit, they're all posing a threat to us right now. But we're also looking at surges in unemployment, hunger and poverty. Where did we go wrong and how do we fix it?
You know, I wish the next president will behave like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that tell America, Philippines, we need a new deal. And then all of us should be here together. We need total mobilization of people. And then we have been appealing, by the way, to the top 100 companies and the richest people in the Philippines. Please help not only the country, help not only the poor, but help yourself by sharing your wealth. So we need wealth tax. This is solidarity tax to help everybody. And we are appealing to Secretary Dominguez. This is being discussed already in the United States, in Europe, and even in Australia. There's a call of some of the rich people. Please, governments, tax ourselves, because this is the where else what can you get? Because if you continue borrowing, it gets very expensive, and then the conditionalities are slowly coming in, and we hope those conditionalities will not be as harsh as it was in the 1990s up to the time of Gloria Macapagal Arroyo. So we have so much to redo, but that is a very important. We need a very good leader who will really mobilize the country behind a very clear development program. And that is, as far as we are concerned, is still missing in the presentation of the different presidential policies.
On that note, Dr. René Ofrenay, lots to chew on there. Thank you so much for the guidance. We appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you much. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Up next, President Duterte claims he has fulfilled most of his campaign promises. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us. You're still watching Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at the headlines. A new study shows the COVID-19 Omicron variant is thrice as infectious as a dreaded Delta variant. Metro Manila now very low risk for COVID-19, according to the Okta Research Group. That says two cities in NCR achieve herd immunity. Well, just like many Filipinos, President Rodrigo Duterte wants clarity on Senator Bongo's 2022 election plans. Duterte's chosen successor announced earlier this week he was pulling out of the presidential race, but Go has yet to make it official. So in a speech in Zamboanga on Thursday, Duterte flat out asked his question to his longtime aide.
Senator Bongo, ano ba talaga mong tatakbo ka o hindi? Well, you have made a lot of people sad than happy. We respect your decision. Lalo na kung pamilya, wala na tayong magawa dyan.
The PDP Laban faction, which President Duterte chairs, says it will continue to convince Senator Go to pursue his presidential bid. The party membership committee head clarified as well they have not yet talked about endorsing another candidate.
As of this date, status quo kami kasi hindi pa naman talaga nag-withdraw si, ano, no? Si Senator Bongo. It tells us that we still have hope, of course, to convince him not to withdraw. Pinapangunahan nila kami, putting words into our mouth. Number one, we have not, in fact, our party chairman himself said that he is not going to support a BBM candidacy. As I have said, the National Council and the National Assembly must agree and must vote as to who we will endorse if ever that we will have no candidate from our own ranks.
Marcos is running with President Duterte's daughter, Sarah, as his vice president. President Duterte slams the Senate for refusing to reverse the budget cut for government's anti-communist insurgency task force. Duterte says this is one of the reasons pushing him to pursue his senatorial run next year. Senate Finance Committee Chair Sonny Angara had said more funds are needed to address the country's other pressing problems, such as the pandemic.
Ako ayaw ko, pero they're trying to derail the itong ilkak eh. Kaya sabi ko, anong akong dagag senador, wala ko dyan. Pang ik-ik lang. Pero kung ganito ang takbo, I'll be forced to really run for senator. Maski kung number 10 ko.
Well, President Duterte claims the House will fill most of his 2016 campaign promises. Duterte cites in particular the improvement of the country's peace and order situation.
My term is nearing its end. I can say with a little bit of pride na halos lahat na pinangako ko, natupad ko. Dito na lang sa peace and order na, but you know, for as long as there are men in this planet, there will always be misdeeds and wrongdoings. Be that as it may, nabi ko, I tried my best.
Duterte also again defended his bloody war on drugs, which is under the scrutiny of the International Criminal Court.
I am a Filipino. I did it not for me. I never claimed credit or said that I am doing this for me and my family. Killing? Anong makukuha ako sa killing? Why? Would it benefit my pocket?
Still ahead, the Philippine Central Bank not too concerned about the Omicron variant. That plus the latest in sports when Dateline Philippines returns. Welcome back. Petitioners against the presidential bid of the late dictator's son, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., urging the Philippine poll body to look into the records of Marcos' tax evasion case. They point out Marcos has not even paid government over that tax case. Mike Navalio now joins us with the details. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, Rain. Presidential aspirant Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. has not paid the fines and the income deficiency taxes imposed by the Court of Appeals over his conviction for non-filing of income tax returns from 1982 to 1985, according to lawyers of civic leaders seeking to cancel the certificate of candidacy. Lawyers led by former Supreme Court spokesperson Ted Test, and today they made a written request to Quezon City Regional Trial Court Branch 105, which originally heard Marcos's tax cases, and were issued a certification that, quote, there is no record on file of compliance, of payment, or satisfaction of the decision of the Regional Trial Court dated July 27, 1995, or the Court of Appeals dated October 31, 1997. For them, this means Mr. Marcos has not satisfied the judgment of the court in these cases, or in plain language, he has not paid the fines and the income taxes due. CCRTC 105 originally sentenced Marcos to 9 years in prison and ordered him to pay fines worth 72,000 pesos for failing to file his ITR and pay taxes from 1982 to 1985, aside from the tax deficiencies due worth around 20,000 pesos. The CA in 1997 modified this, acquitting him of non-payment of taxes, but affirming his conviction for non-filing of ITR. It removed the jail term, but ordered him to pay 36,000 pesos in fines plus surcharges. It also ordered him to pay EIR, the income tax deficiency, due with interest. Based on the information, the petitioner said they will bring this matter to the COMELEC and also the Office of the City Prosecutor of Quezon City, the government agency mandated to enforce the judgment of the RCC. Marcos himself has not addressed this issue, with his spokesperson saying at one point that petitioners should do their own research. Marcos is currently facing seven petitions seeking to block his candidacy for president. Rain?
Mike Navalio right there. Thank you so much for that report. The U.S. Senate passes a bill to fund the government through mid-February, averting the risk of a shutdown. The Democratic-controlled chamber voted 69-28, sending the spending bill for President Biden's signature. Republicans had attempted to delay the vote in protest of vaccine mandates. Funding was set to run out on Friday, midnight, but Congress is facing another urgent deadline. The federal government is approaching its $28.9 trillion borrowing limit. The Treasury Department projects the government would reach this limit by December 15. Failure to extend or lift the limit in time could trigger an economically catastrophic default. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the Omicron variant is proof the pandemic would persist for quite some time. But she hopes the continuing health crisis would not completely stifle economic activity, adding that the U.S. stimulus at the heart of the pandemic helped fuel a very strong recovery. Yellen also said lowering Trump-era tariffs on imported goods from China through a revived exclusion process could help ease some inflationary pressures.
I think the pandemic has contributed in very important ways to the inflation problem that we're facing. And the Trump tariffs that were put in place, some of them create problems without having any real strategic justification. Our U.S. Trade Representative, Catherine Tai, has been working with the Chinese, reviewing the phase one trade agreement. And she's opened up a process in which firms can apply. It's called our domestic tariff exclusion process in cases where the cost to Americans exceed any benefits of the tariffs. This is a process by which tariffs can be lowered. And I think that that could be helpful. Again, it's not a game changer, but these are things we're doing to try to mitigate these pressures.
Here at home, Philippine Central Bank Governor Benjamin Diokno appeals for calm as the Omicron variant continues to rattle financial markets, saying the reaction could be exaggerated. Let's hear more from Warren de Guzman.
Philippine shares were on a steep losing streak prior to Thursday's bounce. It was largely blamed on the new COVID-19 variant Omicron. Not much is known about Omicron yet, but the memory of how the Delta variant forced countries around the world back into hard lockdowns is still quite fresh. Central Bank Governor Benjamin Diokno, however, says he is not worried about it.
We'll continue our accommodative monetary policy until needed by the national government. We're not so concerned with the new virus, or with the new variant, rather. I think there's too much exaggeration on the impact of that. I think the best thing to do really for the Philippines is vaccinate.
Meanwhile, Socioeconomic Planning Secretary Carl Chua spoke at a forum of the Asian Institute of Management advocating the treatment of COVID-19 as endemic, which assumes the virus will not go away and mobility restrictions should not be used to address it. In other words, he too is calling for more vaccinations to fight the pandemic. Whether or not that means there will be no more hard lockdowns in the Philippines remains to be seen. Some business groups lobbied hard against tighter quarantine restrictions when the Delta variant was sending cases to new highs in August and September, but government still locked down the national capital region. And while vaccination levels have certainly improved, the Philippines still ranked last in the Bloomberg COVID resilience ranking for a third month in a row in November. Warren de Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
Mobile wallet GCash says it's ramping up efforts to protect consumers from smishing scams. GCash, along with Union Bank, were found to be among the payment portals used by scammers when asking money from their victims. It says it added extra security features designed to help customers detect and prevent fraud. GCash adds it's working closely with the National Privacy Commission and other government agencies to track and deal with any fraudulent cyber activities. The NPC is investigating telcos and payment platforms following the recent spate of spam messages here in the country. In sports, the coach of Olympic Filipino vaulter E.J. Obiena finally speaks up about the controversy on his supposed non-payment as alleged by the Philippine Athletics Track and Field Association, or PATAFA. Ukrainian Vitaly Petrov called on the association to stop hounding Obiena as has been distracting the Filipinos' training. He also maintains he has already been paid in full by Obiena and that he felt tricked when he was asked about this by PATAFA President Philip Huico. Meanwhile, patron Jim Lafferty has also explained why he got involved in Obiena's finances.
They pay him in pesos all the time. So what does he do? He comes to me because I have Euro bank accounts in Dubai.
There's losing, and then there's losing by a lot. The rebuilding Oklahoma City Thunder hit rock bottom on Thursday, losing by a record 73 points to the Memphis Grizzlies. Memphis led just 12-8 after the first 5 minutes, then proceeded to crush OKC. The Grizzlies' lead went as high as 78 points. Their winning margin easily erased the previous record of 68 points held by the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that'll do it for today. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rain Musngi, and if you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, everyone, as you keep it here on the News Channel.